Well, okay, you are the expert on this one. What is the big news of the past year? Well, we can all name maybe three major events. Let's take, like, the election, the Ted Stevens plane crash, the Deepwater Horizon blowout. But after those, what else? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Our number toll-free, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@aprn.org. We want your ideas on what the big news story of the past year was for Alaska on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Well, when you're in a newsroom and it comes this time, Christmas and New Year's, and so many officials have time off, you can't get people to return your phone calls, and there's a news drought. But that doesn't stop us in the news business from doing the news. We keep doing the news, and so naturally we start going to the past year and recycling. Well, that's why you hear those year-end surveys of what the big stories were every year, because otherwise we wouldn't have anything to talk about. That's the bare facts of it. But when you're in a state like Alaska, where history is made every single year, when you know, not only are the natural forces of a magnitude is to propagate major news, but there were so many things that were unsettled constitutionally, and endless political churn in the state of Alaska. It's extremely turbulent. It still is kind of a frontier, and we always have big news to talk about. And boy, by the time a year goes by, there is a lot. When I assembled, you know, in the introduction of the show, I named three obvious huge news stories that are in the top 10. But then, what are the other ones that would make the top 10? I went through the whole year's news, and essentially, for looking for what were the big things for Alaska, what were the big stories, and I got 23 that I checked off, and I had absolutely no idea how to narrow them down because they seem of equal importance. So I want your idea, what you think was the big news of the past year. It's Talk of Alaska, and our telephone number, as always, is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and our email is talk@aprn.org. And, you know, the ones that we know right away were big stories were the Deepwater Horizon blowout, because it had huge implications for the oil patch in Alaska, propagating massive uncertainty about federal policy about offshore drilling. And just at the time when offshore drilling was about to commence in Alaska, then we had the terrible plane crash in the Bristol Bay area near Ogletikik that took the life of Ted Stevens and four others, our former senator and most likely the most influential Alaskan, the biggest figure in Alaska history of the past 60 years. And then, of course, we had our crazy election. I say crazy because we saw a primary victory by Joe Miller. He sort of came out of nowhere. He had run for the legislature and lost. Suddenly, he's running against Lisa Murkowski, and he wins the primary election. And then, Murkowski won't quit. And so we end up with this incredible history-making write-in campaign that involves the Alaska Native corporations very heavily, involves that Supreme Court decision about the size of corporate contributions and the nature of corporate contributions. I mean, we saw that Supreme Court, we wouldn't have had the whole, without Citizens United in the Supreme Court, we would not have had the formation of that hugely influential group that put, what, a couple of million dollars into the Lisa Murkowski write-in campaign, which apparently now has prevailed, although we still are waiting for Judge Beislein to go along with the state court or not, but we'll probably see certification. So those are the three biggies for sure, and somebody who's been having to track all three of them is APRN's Libby Casey, who is our Washington correspondent. She runs our Washington, D.C. bureau, and even though she's on leave, we asked her to check in with us on this show. Libby, how you doing?
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you.
You're currently in a vehicle on the highway.
I'm doing some holiday travel. I'm doing some holiday travel, but I am not driving myself. So I'm just a passenger, and it's good to be with you. You know, you mentioned that it's the time of the year we reflect on what's happened, and I think it's sort of a cathartic moment to think about those things, to think what has happened the past year, what are the big news stories, and what do we expect in the year to come? So I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is, you know, one big thing that happened for you that we probably should talk about is that they essentially restructured the House press gallery.
Oh, I had a big move this year. Yeah, probably not. It's like how the sausage is made. But yes, I work out of the U.S. Capitol building. They have a gallery there where media broadcasters, in particular where I work, can station themselves to be right in the heart of the action. And we had a big move this year. So I'm finally back in the House Radio and TV Gallery and happy to be there. It's a location that APRN has been privileged to have for quite a long time. And it really gets us right. We're just a floor above where the U.S. House meets, and we're right down the hall from where the Senate meets. So it's a great place to be.
Do you still have that little closet, that little room there that they set up that that looks like it's a window looking out on the Washington Monument or something? And and there's these fake books on the wall, and the Congress people get in there and they go on camera.
Yeah, so we have had it's like a broom closet office, but I actually have a slightly bigger space now. It's big enough for maybe 1.5 people, but that's really all the space we need. So we're kind of a compact, we're a modest operation here in D.C. But yes, we're right next to where members of the House give press conferences. And, you know, you see these things on TV, on CNN, or on the big networks, on PBS, and it looks very stately, seeing the congressman in front of a bookshelf with the American flag everywhere. Well, it turns out the big secret was that those books weren't actual books. They were like little half books, little stage books.
Yeah.
So once you get down to D.C., you start seeing some of the stagecraft that goes in to making the lawmakers look so officious sometimes. And look as professional as they do. There's a lot of stagecraft that's involved.
Now, we're seeing, the results of the election are, we look like Lisa Murkowski comes back, but she's not so tied with the Republican minority, and she seemed when she came into the lame duck session to show that right away. Do you take this as a sign of things to come, that we don't have a party line Lisa Murkowski anymore?
It's not just Alaskans who are noticing, Steve, Lisa Murkowski's recent vote. It's a lot of people in Washington, from the politicians themselves to national journalists, were looking at Lisa Murkowski's recent votes in the lame duck session and sort of marveling at them and asking, is this a change for her? Because she voted for a lot of President Obama's priorities. You know, she voted for things like the tax cut compromise, something that President Obama forged with the Republican leadership. She also voted for the DREAM Act, which is did not pass, but that's regarding immigration. It would have, if it had passed, it would have given young people who came to the U.S. illegally as children the chance to work toward citizenship by going to college or entering the military. Murkowski was one of only three Republicans to support that. She also voted for the START Treaty, which is the new nuclear treaty with Russia. And so all of these items sort of added up, including Don't Ask, Don't Tell. She was one of a handful of Republicans to support repealing that. Now, what Lisa Murkowski told us, journalists who sort of asked her about this string of votes, was that, no, this isn't a new trend. This is just my perspective on these issues. I'm listening to Alaskans. Majority of Alaskans do support repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And she said, I'm certainly not taking marching orders from President Obama, but I am listening to military leaders. And in the case of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the START Treaty, that's what they wanted. That's what a lot of them were signaling. They thought it was time for both of those to get dealt with.
And now, if you take all those and you stack them up, she's the only Republican that voted for all of them.
Right. She's the only Republican who voted for all four of those. That's correct. And she says it's just timing. It's just the way these votes came down and the timing of it. It's not like she's changed her tune. And that, for example, had the health care bill come up for a vote 2 weeks ago, she would have voted no on that. So if financial reform had come up 2 weeks ago, she would have voted no on that if it hadn't looked the way she wanted it to look. So she says it's nothing new. On the other hand, though, she did say during the debates and after the debates when she was running for re-election here as a writing candidate, yeah, I'm not beholden to the Republican Party, and I can go my own way. And so we are sort of watching to see what that will mean. Now, she's got to make a lot of people happy in Alaska, right? Because the people who voted for her, it turns out, were some Republicans, some Democrats, many independents. And so keeping all of those electorate bodies happy is going to be a bit of a tightrope walk.
Okay, Libby Casey, I appreciate you being with us from Washington, D.C. by cell phone as you drive your way into our nation's capital on what's supposed to be your day off. Let's tune in on a few Alaskans here and see what they think about the big news of the past year. Lucy in Quickluck, is that? Lucy, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. The big news that I have in mind is Joe Miller. And I have a message for you. It's time for you to concede. The big writing winner, Lisa Murkowski, has clearly won, and it's time for you to quit playing around and listen to the voters.
Lucy, thank you for that.
Yes, thank you very much, and Happy New Year. Thank you,
I'm not hearing me anymore. Oh, here it is. My earphone came unplugged. It's more or less working now, but it's a loose connection. All right, well, I'll get by as best I can. Libby Casey, one of the big items of the year was that Don Young got off the hook, wouldn't you say?
As far as we can tell, yes, that's the case. He put out a statement a couple of months ago saying that the Justice Department had notified him that it's no longer investigating him. He was under investigation, actually, for a couple of different things. The way the Justice Department works, they don't put out a statement saying, hey, so-and-so's no longer being investigated. They will tell the subject of their inquiry, but not the media, and they don't really answer our questions about it. We don't know, of course, entirely if there could be maybe a House ethics investigation into Don Young. That's something that we also don't know until it reaches a certain stage that it becomes public. So there's no way to really know if he's quote-unquote off the hook. But he was under investigation for a number of years, spent over $1 million in legal bills. And he has been certainly, I think, lighter of heart in the last few months, knowing that, in his perspective, that this has wrapped up. And it certainly didn't hurt him, though, Steve, in the last two election runs, did it? I mean, he was able to retain his seat, only member of Congress from Alaska. It did damage, though, I would say, him a little bit in D.C. because he lost his top-ranking Republican spot on the Natural Resources Committee. And that was because of pressure from John Boehner, the guy who was the top Republican in the House, who is now going to be the new Speaker of the House. He was concerned about these ethics investigations, so he pressured Don Young to step down. So we're waiting to see what the new year holds for Congressman Young and whether he will get a subcommittee chairmanship, as he is hoping he will. He won't get a committee chairmanship, but he's hoping to get a subcommittee slot. And so that will all play out in the first couple weeks of Congress. That's when that sort of jockeying for power gets settled with the subcommittee.
Well, meanwhile, purely being a member of the majority, he's going to have... He gets a better office, I think. Does he know what
which is impressive, because he already had a really nice office. He already had a fantastic office. And for you Alaskans who've been down to visit the Capitol, maybe you've gone into Congressman Young's office or walked the halls of the House office buildings, you know Don Young's office from like a block away, because he has a giant bearskin hanging behind the front office receptionist desk. I mean, it's like huge. And I have been sitting in his office waiting for a meeting before and seen just tourists or, you know, people who work for a congressman in a place like Maine or Kentucky walk by and do a triple take because of the giant bear in hanging on Don Young's wall. But he is moving offices. He's going to be in Obie's office, Congressman Obie, who is no longer serving come January. And so he's getting a bit of an upgrade. And Don Young says, hey, you know what this means? I'm going to all this effort to move offices. This means I am not retiring, folks. Because there's some question about, you know, as members of Congress age, at what point do they think they want to step down? And he says, I'm not going anywhere. And so he's sort of putting out there a marker to other Republicans in Alaska, as well as Democrats, that he plans to run again in 2 years.
That's an interesting issue. You know, in his last program here, we were talking about this issue of chairmanships. And he said, look, I'm just so senior that I've used them all up.
And there is some truth to that. Yeah, I mean, he did cycle out of being the head of the chairman. The head of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. But we can't lose sight of the fact that he did step down as ranking member on Natural Resources, not because he timed out, but because of the Republicans wanting to sort of take a stance as the ethical members of Congress. You remember when Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats took over leadership in the House, they said, we're going to clean up Washington. And the Republicans, of course, are hoping to do the same thing. So everyone's sort of always trying to give the impression of being the more moral and ethical one. Now, what's going to be fun to watch when Congressman Young comes up is a battle over earmarks, because he has said unabashedly, I am pro-earmark. I think I know best what my constituents need in Alaska, certainly better than some bureaucrat in the Obama administration. And so I'm going to continue to fight for them. But there's an earmark ban in the House among Republicans. So we're all looking to see how successful he'll be in that fight.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting just politically, I would think, the coming year, because Congress will have to translate this new political landscape into policy. And with an eye toward another election coming up in 2 years, and knowing that there is a political force, the Tea Party movement is a political force in this country that made its strength known during the election, and has some people in the Congress. So there's going to be some different political winds blowing, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. There is that feeling that they have to stay true to their pledge of no earmarks. Folks who ran under the Tea Party mantle or got Tea Party support, even people who didn't, are sensing that wind in the air of, you know, we've got to really tackle the deficit. This is a major, major problem. But as Don Young says, these young people come in and they say, these new members of Congress, they say, I am opposed to earmarks, I blah, blah, blah. But then they get into office and they realize that folks back home want them to get projects and want them to send money home for that new that needs to be built or to repair that aging highway. And so it's a push-pull. And Congressman Young says, I have seen this happen before. I will see it again. People need to bring home the bacon, and they need to do it to make their constituents happy. And what he's expecting to see, is, as are many others, is perhaps less earmarking, but more behind-the-scenes earmarking, you know, making a call to the Department of Education and saying, hey, I need this project back in my hometown. And the problem with that is, ironically, you know, the push against earmarks is to clean up government, make it all more transparent. If there is this sort of make...
Whoops. Okay, we're getting dropout there on Libby Casey. And we lost her. But that's fine. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, as we try and reestablish contact. There's no tunnels, is there, on the way into D.C.? I know of. But she's on a cell phone and in motion as we speak. Our subject is the year in review, and what do you think are the big stories of the past year? And, of course, the three big ones would be Deepwater Horizon, the Ted Stevens plane crash, and the election. The election, very big in Alaska, and our callers are concurring with that. Let's go to Greg, joins the program from Hoonah. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Greg.
Good morning. Yeah. On a personal level, I think it's because it gets us right in the gut, as you say, but everybody should watch Food, Inc. It is the most revealing thing about our food industry, and it's really interesting, and I think it's a must-see for everyone in America. But on a political level, like you mentioned at the start, I think everybody should watch Zeitgeist, and now the addendum that's followed it up. Zeitgeist came out 3 years ago, I believe, and now they came up with an addendum. And it just gets into our money supply and how it's run, how it started, what happened to it in 1913, and now it's 100 years later. And it's absolutely corrupt, and we need to get our money system back into our own hands. And it's a must-see for everybody. People need to get educated on this, because unless America gets our money supply back, we're being ripped off at every corner that we can possibly do. And people don't realize it. We're $47 trillion in debt. And that's just an astounding number, because that's put my grandchildren in debt. That's put my grandchildren's grandchildren in debt. And it's out of control, and it has to be stopped. And the only way it's going to be stopped is people to be educated. So I think those two things are the greatest things that I've seen in the news. So anyway.
All right, Greg. Thank you.
You bet. Have a great day.
That from out of Hoonah. One of the items that I had in my list of potential top stories of the year was the fact that a man by the name of John Marvin Jr. in Hoonah killed two police officers in a standoff that just basically thunderstruck certainly all of Southeast Alaska as a shocking situation. And that was followed not very long afterwards by word of a killing in Bethel, where a man by the name of Benjamin Kaiser had been tortured before he was killed. And there's three people facing charges in that homicide, including one of the people who reported it. And a few other, kind of gruesome death items. We had the cold case, Jane Lim cold case, which was actually resolved on new evidence coming out of the labs 22 years ago. She was convicted of killing Scott Colville in Sitka 22 years ago. And she pled out on that one. And that one is resolved. That was certainly a noteworthy story of 2010. APRN's Libby Casey, you're back with us, I understand.
I am. Did you guys get bored with me and hang up with me? Is that what happened?
It just went away. All of a sudden it was wah, wah, wah. It went.
My sincere apologies. As you mentioned, I am in transit, but I'm not driving. I'm not physically driving. I am a passenger in a car. Heading back to the nation's capital.
Well, this one must have been really frustrating for you. When Deepwater Horizon happened last spring, a big blowout, Gulf of Mexico, the administration quickly says, we got to stop offshore drilling until we figure out what went wrong here. And then they began backpedaling almost at once. And it must have been really hard, because even today, it's hard to figure out what the implications for Alaska are, wouldn't you say?
I would say, Steve, and you and so many other Alaskans remember what happened when the Exxon Valdez ran aground. And it was so, I think, interesting and heartrending in Alaska about the deep Horizon spill is that so many Alaskans came out of the woodwork and said, this just really resonates with me, because I remember what happened in Valdez so clearly, in Prince William Sound so clearly. It's like it was just yesterday. It was sort of opening a wound again. I don't know if you got that sense, Steve, but I certainly did.
Oh, yes.
And a fair number of Alaskans went down to the Gulf to either share their expertise, their experience on citizens' advisory councils. Alaska Natives went down to look at it and sort of advocate for, hey, here's why we don't want offshore drilling in a place like the Beaufort Sea, because we're concerned about these things. And then, of course, the oil companies really had to get involved and figure out how to problem solve, because they had more expertise than the federal government, surely, how to try to solve this problem. But the administration did have to just go with the flow here and try to figure things out as they happened. And it was a bit chaotic, and I think it still is. And it's unclear as to how drilling in Alaska will move forward and will be affected. I think the administration was certainly called to the carpet for it, because there was a lot of stop-go, a lot of uncertainty there. But this was such a dramatic story, and I'm surprised that it's not being talked about still more. I mean, it was such a huge item, and we really don't know the impact to all the wildlife down in the Gulf yet, the impact on jobs and people's careers as fishermen down there. So it's one of these stories of 2010 that may get lost in the shuffle a little bit, because the well got capped, But it certainly will be a long-lasting story for the Gulf, just as the Exxon Valdez was for Alaska.
And what we saw really rather quickly out of the administration was suddenly reorganizing or trying to reorganize the Minerals Management Service, making it into the Bummer, as they're calling it, or BOMRI, the Bureau of Ocean.
I know. None of us know what to call it. Yeah, the BOOM. Yeah. New name change.
But nonetheless, it does seem to have a different feel to it. The agency does seem to have, it's not just, putting leases out there and getting the most money from the oil companies anymore, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and the problem was that the people who were approving the leases were the same, and reaping the rewards for it were the same people, the people were doing all the same jobs, right? They were with one hand giving the leases and with the other hand collecting the money. And so now they're trying to separate everything out. So there's more of a delineation between permitting, more of a time lapse, so things aren't done quite so quickly, and then a separate group that will do things like collect royalties. Because it was like too sweet of a deal, and there wasn't enough regulation there, and the administration has recognized that. And even the oil companies have said, okay, we'll play by the new rules. We don't want this kind of thing to happen again later.
No, and of course they don't. We're seeing, I watch the newsletters from the American Petroleum Institute, and, very quietly they're reexamining, they're cementing practices, and the technical panels are coming up with their recommendations, and it's clear that there were some real, real problems with the Deeper Water Horizon in terms of the way that the well was being monitored. That they had lots of monitoring, but they didn't necessarily have people that knew what it meant and were watching it at the right time to see when something important happened. And they really need to change how these control rooms look. And it also looks as if there we'll see a presence from now on by federal personnel on these offshore rigs. And that's totally new.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear from Alaskans if they think this will have a lasting effect on drilling in Alaska, everything from offshore to even onshore. I think we're all curious. Will it affect the gas industry, gas issues? I'd love to hear what people have to say.
Right, me too. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@APRN.org. So far, people mostly want to talk about the election, although we did have that one that wanted to say that the Federal Reserve was one of the big stories of the past year. And
Stephen, when Greg called from Huna talking about the debt, I mean, the debt is going to be a major story of 2011. There is no doubt about that. And we did see the president convene a panel. We also saw some independent groups put together some proposals on how to tackle the debt. But all the Alaskan, politicians in D.C., Senators Begich and Murkowski and Congressman Young say, This can no longer just go on. There's got to be a way to tackle it. The tough thing is balancing the fragile economy with tackling the debt, because as President Obama decided along with the Republicans in the Senate, it wasn't the time, according to them, to start reining in tax cuts and stuff like that, because they wanted the economy to kind of get some more jump starts, get some more of that, defibrillator action, and then work on the debt in 2011. So that is going to be, I'm telling you, the big thing. And there might be a lot of belt tightening, and then there might be some pain. But Greg will see the story come to light.
You betcha. Let's go now to Sitka, where Matt joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Matt.
Happy New Year, Steve. I hope Santa brought you everything you wanted.
Oh, everything.
That ticket to Jamaica for the month.
Not quite.
Well, I know you've talked about the election, but I think there's an aspect of it that I haven't heard much from the media, and that is that here we are in Alaska, and the Sarah Palin candidate, Mr. Miller, lost under extraordinary circumstances, and as you know, in a writing campaign. And I think that shows the relative weakness of the Tea Party movement versus the mainstream. I think Lisa Murkowski's victory is demonstrating the strength of the mainstream, and I think that the upcoming national campaign is going to be significantly affected. I just think that that the rest of the country should pay a little more attention to what happened here in Alaska on that campaign. And that's all I had to say. I think that part of the story has been ignored.
Yeah, Matt. I want to think about that because, it's very odd the way that our politics propagate out. If you were to recall, it was in the primary that Sarah Palin made her amazing political showing against Frank Murkowski. I mean, people were sick of Frank Murkowski, including Republicans, and by golly, here was the primary election, and Sarah Palin wins. And that started her. That started her out. So now it sounds to me like you're saying, well, you got Joe Miller, who came in also in the primary, and of course, probably would not have prevailed if it hadn't been for that abortion issue that was on the ballot.
Also, you know, it was the Republican primary, and there's a very activist small percentage of the even the Republican Party that was motivated to get Joe Miller to win the nomination. But I think the mainstream was not motivated, and I think that's what's happening on the Democratic side of the coin, is that nationally, in the presidential election, over 125 million voters voted, but in this last one, it was something only like 75 million voters. It wasn't so much that there was a move to the right; it was that the center and the left, many in the center, and most of the left, just stayed home. They weren't motivated. And here in Alaska, I thought it was pretty significant that a conservative state, and Alaska is a conservative state, that this incredible writing campaign was successful. I think national pundits and the national media should pay a little more attention to that, because I think nationally, there's a lot made of this Tea Party movement, but there are a lot of people out in America who are very frustrated with what's going on in America, as well they should be, but it doesn't mean that we want to burn our bridges from underneath us.
Right. So there may be a maturation beyond the Tea Party stage, maybe we could say, Matt.
Yes, it is. And I hope it is, because, the biggest unmentioned story in national politics right now are the darn wars. We're still involved in these wars. Let's get out of them. I think that was why many people on the left stayed home from the elections. They're really discouraged. And that story is never... That's the biggest story going on. We're about to enter or finish our 10th year of war in Afghanistan.
Man,
I'm going on. Thank you very much. Happy New Year. I hope you have a good year, and public radio has a good year. And thank you for being there throughout the year. And I'll get off the air.
All right, Matt. Thank you so much for your thoughtful call. 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A lot to think about there. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. We'll get to emails in a moment as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. It's almost time to file online for your PFD, and when you do, you can make an impact by sharing just a little with a cause you care about. Celebrate the arts, invest in education, shelter a homeless pet, lend a hand, or even make a wish come true when you pick, click, give to one of Alaska's nonprofits. Visit pickclickgive.org to decide how you will make Alaska better with a small gift from your PFD. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
APRN's Libby Casey is with us as we go over the big events of the past year, 2010, the top stories of the year. We know the top three, but what are the ones beyond that? Well, we're talking about that. We had an email from Linda in Douglas, said, I think one of the biggest stories in Alaska in 2010 was the killing of two police officers in Hoonah, and we did mention that briefly after the phone call from Greg. And I would have to say that this issue did kind of circulate back. There were police officers attacked several times in Anchorage, and we also had a number of during our last week during our holiday greetings show, we had a whole lot of people who called up and wanted to send best wishes to first responders and people that were going to be on duty over the weekend. So this is a subject on the minds of many people in Alaska. I want to go to Gary, who joins the program from Kasilof. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Gary, what do you think is the big news?
Well, you know, we seem to not learn from our past mistakes when it comes to, like, the oil spill in the Gulf. You know, we suffered through that up here in Alaska, and countless of millions of dollars in the fishing industry and everything else. And one of the things I remember back when they were talking on the news about this, they were talking about in Europe or the North Sea particularly, these guys that are out there on these drilling rigs have to be licensed to do this. It's a professional license, and if they lose it, they lose their job. And it seems like we let the oil industry go out there and do all this stuff, but they're not seem to be kept accountable for what they do. And if they, the guys that are on these rigs had to have some sort of a license or some sort of accountability for the things that they do by putting faulty equipment and everything else out there, that maybe, you know, they might think twice before they put something that's not going to do the job that it's designed to do, or it's faulty, or whatever the problem may be.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I think there are many, many people who seem to believe that we haven't quite learned our lessons yet on that.
You know, instead of cleaning it up, make sure it doesn't happen. That's my point, I guess, is what I'm getting to,
yeah.
You know.
All right, Gary.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
No, thank you, and like to wish everybody in the state of Alaska a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year indeed. This one from Don in Skagway. I think it was around Christmas Eve that a small announcement was slipped into the news stream by some Department of Energy type of council that an Alaska gas line wouldn't happen for another 35 years. And meanwhile, Canadian development along the Alcan Corridor is in a boom cycle, with drilling and pipe being buried along the road to the point where you can smell raw gas driving through. I hope the people of Alaska will soon realize we must take control of our destiny. Happy New Year to all across the great land. That one's a hard one to focus on, the whole gas line issue, Libby, or you or me or Dave Donaldson or anybody, because it's all vague and it's all behind the scenes. You know, we've had Larry Pursley on here, and he said, well, it's going to be behind the scenes for a while, and we don't really know what went on with those open seasons. But we all know natural gas market is changing. It would appear, wouldn't you say, that the Obama administration is supportive of a natural gas pipeline from Alaska, whatever that means.
It is, and that's the question. What is it really worth, and what does that mean? And as you mentioned, Larry Pursley now has that job as the federal coordinator, and he's been making a lot of trips to Alaska. And I think just trying to educate people, that's the message I get from his office about what, let's be real here. I mean, I think Pursley is a realist about what a gas line could mean, how it could happen, what kind of form it could take. And he's trying to sort of assemble the players and the different factions. He's also going to places like Canada and places like Texas, because this is where a lot of these big movers and shakers are. I think, you know, there was a good point there made about how viable is this compared to what else is going on in the industry at large. And I think that's going to be the question. The Obama administration can certainly say it's supportive of it, but it's not like they're going to go in and build a pipeline, right? So
right. It's
market forces at work.
Yeah. Well, we'll see early in the year that the EPA begins to kick in with its regulatory power over carbon dioxide emissions.
That's right, and that's something that Lisa Murkowski has been sort of waging a war over.
Yes.
One of the things that she points to as a credential, look, I'm not an Obama, you know,
yeah.
I'm not taking marching orders from the Obama administration. This was a big item that she was fighting, trying to work on that. And so we're going to see in her role as the top Republican on the Energy Committee, assuming, of course, she keeps that role come January, that may be something we see her rising to work on again.
Yeah, but it will be interesting because it has the potential to change the market for energy, electrical energy generation, because that's who's going to be regulated, is the power plants. And the fact of the matter is that natural gas has a much smaller carbon footprint than coal, which is being used to generate power all over the East Coast.
Right. so there could be more of an incentive to switch over to the form of gas.
Yep.
Yeah. And we're waiting to see sort of how aggressively the Obama administration will follow through with this.
Yeah, I don't think the markets
ahead of the EPA.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't.
Will
think
keep the teeth that she's threatened or what?
Right. Yeah. And right now, I think the market is betting that that there will be little. The market is not predicting anything happening on this right now, as near as I can tell. But should there be some results shown from the EPA, there would be a reaction from the market, and then we just have to see what we would see. It's just going to be a very interesting thing we're going to have to keep our eyes on. This one from Lowell in Anchorage. A Newsweek article in October, I think, reported there may not be enough oil in the Alaska pipeline to keep it from freezing in winter in as little as 3 to 5 years, given that we have another record state budget, no realistic gas line plan in the near-term horizon. I'm concerned the administration, legislature, and voters have their heads in the sand regarding the state's fiscal future. That from Lowell in Anchorage. Well, of course, we know that this coming legislative session is going to be looking at the incentives for the oil industry certainly has its mind on the pipeline. I think that this idea that in a couple of years there won't be enough oil coming down the pipeline is not quite the way it is. That was based on some assumptions that have already been technologically dealt with, and there's an ongoing study, as far as I know, with the pipeline that is looking at where are these realistic points where we have a problem, we have to start heating oil or whatever. And it's not like the industry doesn't know about this, but I think 3 to 5 years just simply, it's not that close. But then again, we're looking for comments, and that's a comment. This one from Dave O. In Cordova. In a world one thinks fraught with enough painful distractions already, a rise of ocean CO2 levels, if significant enough, could prove to be the straw which breaks Alaska's camelback. As way too busy humans, we tend to let this slide under the carpet. Yeah, it is. It's so big we don't even, how can we know? One item that I noticed in going back over the news of the year, not the big story of the year because nothing really has happened, but they have set up an ocean acidification monitoring center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So there may be some, better moves to monitor the CO2. And the other thing that we're starting to see, Libby, and you really can't avoid it, is that whether you want to believe it's human originated or not, the fact of the matter is that the ocean waves are getting bigger, there's more flooding, and this just plain is happening.
And it's a huge issue in Alaska. You mentioned the acidification issue. The rest of the country is not as tuned in to these problems. Certainly, there are possible states are, but the Arctic is huge. I mean, what's happening in the Arctic, what's on the horizon as far as international pumps.
Yes. Oh, we're losing you again, but I think I know exactly what you're saying, and this is the question. Oh, and we lost the line again, didn't we? Okay. Libby Casey in transit into Washington, D.C., and just passed through one of those weird little cell phone blank areas, dead zones, as it were. But I know what she's talking about, and this is going to be a huge issue that's just starting to reach the policy arena, which is the Arctic Ocean with less sea ice invites more commerce, and not just oil and gas drilling, but there will be territorial claims. There will be all sorts of moves toward enforcement. And the United States is amazingly behind in icebreaker technology compared to even Canada. Certainly, somebody's going to be taking a closer look at that. And indeed, the Arctic Ocean and Arctic Ocean issues will be huge in the coming year and for every year after that. This one from Sally. Discussions have centered around the primary and writing campaigns this past summer. My comment is that as a registered Democrat, I felt disenfranchised as I could not vote in the primary for the person I wanted. In order to support my choice, I would have had to change my party affiliation to Republican or Independent. In other words, ride the fence and not my conscience. This is unfair, and I want the system to change back to what it was for many, many years prior. Alaskans had always been able to vote for the candidate of their choice, not based on party lines, and I miss it. I was a proud Democrat for Sturgeolowski. Wasn't a problem back then. When did it change? That from Sally in Petersburg. Yeah. big issues and big questions are coming out in this discussion of what the news was. What were the big news stories of the past year? We've got APRN's Libby Casey with us by cell phone. And I think I'll just go down through some of these 23 items that I picked. How about the fact that a woman was killed by a wolf, or probably a pack of wolves at Chignik Lake, and the wolves grew more bold at Port Moeller, maybe because they're having trouble preying on caribou, and it's not entirely clear. But nonetheless, certainly a big story of the news, a big story of the year in Alaska, and a big story all over the country when a wolf attacks and kills a person. One item that just sort of kept buzzing along at a background level all year long and really is a continuation of the same story from the year before, which is that the deaths of the homeless in Anchorage have continued at a high level. For a long time, there were not that many deaths among the homeless. In the last couple of years, there have been quite a few. And meanwhile, there has also been a legal case over confiscation of materials from homeless camps in Anchorage, one to keep in mind. Here's one. Wally Hickel died. Had an amazing funeral. We lost Wally Hickel as well as Ted Stevens in 1 year. Or this one. Bill Allen and Rick Smith finally go to jail. Yeah, the VCO executives that figured into all those corruption trials are finally starting to serve their time. Or this one. Governor Sean Parnell, who has been reelected, escalates a combative stance toward the federal government, suing over health care, endangered species, not applying for stimulus funds. The feds begin to have a problem with the state of Alaska's predator control program. So we have a governor now who is in as combative a stance toward the federal government as Wally Hickel ever was. And we lose Wally Hickel. Here's one that kind of slips under the radar, but if you are a wonk about money, it didn't at all. And that was that there was this colossal legal case over the mishandling of the state's retirement funds. Essentially, the projected yield of the retirement fund suddenly dropped, and we were stuck with this huge deficit in the retirement benefits for state employees. And the result was, we're still having to shovel money into that big hole. And Mercer Financial just settled with the state for $500 million on that case, $500 million into the state's pockets for retirement because that legal case was finally settled. Another one that we'll probably hear more about but was around in the news over and over again all through the year is 8A contracting and the controversy over it. There was legislation introduced last year by Senator Claire McCaskill and also Mississippi Representative Benny Thompson to curb or close the loopholes in the 8A contracting. And we saw the beginnings of a large campaign by the Native corporations. Without 8A contracts, we would see really kind of an economic implosion in the Native corporations in Alaska. It's Talk of Alaska, and we're looking at the big news of the year, and there's a bunch more here by email and telephone. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage of 550-8422. Email is talk@aprn.org as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com.
It's Talk of Alaska. APRN's Libby Casey is with us once again. We had this comment from Pamela who said, I think folks are overhyping Miller and not recognizing the primary was open. Oh, did we lose her again?
No, I'm still here. Hi, okay. Steve. Still here. Just on a big adventure. Holiday adventure.
Indeed. Pamela's thinking is that basically the public just kind of wised up and realized it wanted no part of Joe Miller and that it you shouldn't be thinking, well, it's just because of the closed primary and all that sort of thing is a pretty good point. I was kind of blasting along on these stories all by myself here, Libby.
And my apologies.
And 8A's came up. Now we've seen the end of the lame duck session. We saw really towards the end of the lame duck session that we got the introduction of legislation by both Claire McCaskill, Senator, and Representative Benny Thompson to close those loopholes, the no competitive bidding and the no ceiling provisions, and to assure that more benefit goes to shareholders of the Native corporations involved in 8A contracting. Are they just going to go away now? Or is that issue going to come back next year? We saw that ProPublica put out this big expose on the Cape Fox Corporation's 8As. And there was a bunch of stuff in the Washington Post. This is not just an Alaska story.
It's not. And the fact that members of Congress outside of Alaska are bringing about legislation shows that it's not exclusive to Alaska. The 8As are not going to go away, nor is the issue going to go away. So we're going to see this evolve over the next few months, and we'll see how far legislation gets. Now, the delegation being split, having both a Democrat and two Republicans on the Alaska delegation, means that they can sort of work this, because they are in favor of the 8A program, they can work this from both angles. And I think McCaskill probably would have moved forward sooner and more vociferously had it not been for Mark Begich, because he's able to talk to her as a member of the same Democratic caucus. But the 8As are going to change. And I think the question is, will the 8As be on board? And will the change take a form that they agree with? And they say, yeah, these are changes we can live with. Or will the whole program come under attack and essentially crumble? You know, this remains to be seen. I would speculate that it won't crumble because it does have so much power and there are so many advocates for it. But we are likely to see it change and evolve, essentially.
Yeah. And it's also the, you know, the 8As themselves are evolving. We've certainly seen this where three regional corporations, you know, the three biggies really, came together and said, yeah, we think it should be reformed too. So it would seem that
That's right, because I think they recognize, they recognize that change is coming and are you going to be part of the change or are you going to get swept up in the change?
Yeah,
so
in other words, the issue ain't dead.
Absolutely. You know, Steve, one thing I wanted to mention that people haven't really been talking about yet, to switch gears just slightly, is a woman who used to be the governor. What was her name again?
Oh, yes, Palin.
Oh, yeah. Sarah Palin, right. You know, I don't hear her name used a lot by Alaskans, but down here in the lower 48, she is talked about all the time. I feel like Washington is mildly obsessed with Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
And as we get ready to look to the 2012 presidential cycle, her name is being constantly talked about. And it's interesting to me the dichotomy, how she's not talked about so much in Alaska, but she is talked about so much outside of Alaska. And I was reflecting on the year and realizing that had she not quit the governorship, had she stayed in office, she would be done now, right? She would have finished her first term right about now, about a month ago, and someone else would be coming in as governor. But she left that post, of course, early, and even though that was a story of 2009, it certainly had ramifications for the past year.
Let's go to Suzanne, joins the program from Palmer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Suzanne. Big story of the past year?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up more of a local issue, the Wishbone Hill Mine that Usabelli is looking into starting up here at the foothills of Moose Range, and it's just affecting a lot of local people right now. And
it's going to be a lot of trucks, right?
It will be a lot of trucks.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of children on the road, so you know, it cause for concern.
All right, Suzanne, thanks for
thanks
that
so
from Palmer. Let's go down to Bob, joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bob.
How are you this morning?
Oh, not so bad. I always enjoy. It's always a great day when I'm doing this show.
Absolutely.
Are we losing Libby again? Is that what that is? What a great sound. R2-D2 couldn't do that.
But they tried.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Oh, well, you know, there was one of the emails that came in, you know, asked about the origin of the partisan primary.
And we all know it was the Republicans chose to do that. The Democrats deliberately keep theirs open.
Right. And if you recall, it was, I believe it was almost 20 years ago now, in 1992, when Virginia Collins almost beat Don Young in the congressional primary because so many Democrats crossed over to vote for her. They said, "Well, you know, if we're going to have, you know, if we're going to have a choice, you know, we want, you know, we want to choose from either this person or that person." And so many people switched over, but apparently not enough to make a difference. But it scared people enough to change their primary, as I recall.
Yeah, and there is, although there are certain issues that are definitely, you know, kind of red meat issues in the Republican Party these days. Abortion is certainly one of them, for instance. And, you know, we have moderate Republicans that are pro-choice. I mean, Ted Stevens was very Republican, very pro-choice. Lisa Murkowski's pro-choice.
It's amazing how that's sort of this litmus test for the primary, but it's not a really good litmus test for, you know, the general public, I would say.
Yeah, yeah, but it seems that there are these ideological issues that essentially the party higher-ups wanted that ideological purity. At least that's the argument they gave at the time, as I recall.
Well, and that's why it probably is so important for everyone to vote in the primary like they do in the general, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, Bob in Fairbanks, thanks a lot for that. Mike, down in Palmer, you're on Talk of Alaska. What do you think was the big story of the year?
Well, there seems to be a national sentiment which has a trickle-down effect even here in Alaska. And one of the things that people are concerned about is Congress being able to move forward with issues and needs of the American people. And one of the things that I've been discussing with friends and seems to run a popular sentiment amongst my social circle is the need for considering ethics and honesty in government. I recall when Sarah Palin was running for governor, she came out to Palmer, and one of the questions I asked her was, what are you going to do to restore voter confidence with the people of Alaska? And she said, absolute openness, honesty, and we're not going to fool around. We're going to be absolutely above board in this. Of course, that didn't happen. What is of concern is getting Congress to cooperate with each other and meet the needs of the people. And one of the popular topics that's been going around is the considering term limits. The other one is publicly funded elections to keep our politicians honest and to stop accepting lobbying. And in many countries, many first world countries, particularly in Europe, that is being done. And I think that's the only way that we're going to be able to get Congress to move forward and, you know, meet the needs of the people.
All right, Mike, I want to thank you. We're out of time, and I want to say goodbye to Libby. So thank you, Mike, for that. Is Libby with us, or she's gone? I don't have to say goodbye to her then. Oh, good. Well, then I can bring up a couple of other ones that didn't get mentioned as big stories. How about the weather forecaster out in King Salmon getting busted for terrorism and putting together an assassination hit list? Kind of a big story, I would say. And then there was the bycatch of King Salmon in the Gulf of Alaska, skyrocketing by the trawl fleet. Oh, yeah, and the Golden Seas losing its engine power, and it just happened that there was an oil company response vessel there to rescue that boat before it went aground. Oh, yeah, and there was a tribal summit. President Obama had another meeting with the tribes. Well, next week on Talk of Alaska, outdoor writer Stephen Rinella, author of American Buffalo. Kristen Spack on the controls today. Thank you so much. Pat Yak and Josh Edge on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Penn Air, operating since 1955 and providing 9 destinations with service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations and rates online at pennair.com. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.